When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're listening to Affected by Altitude, a Colorado Rockies podcast for and by Rockies fans on Rocky Mountain Rooftop. Thank you for joining us as we discuss all things baseball and Colorado Rockies.
Top of the morning to ye. Welcome to Rocky Mountain Rooftop. Here on this St. Patty's Day, the Raven, I'm your host, Skylar Timmins. And this is a Colorado Rockies podcast, part of the Rocky Mountain Rooftop Network. This is Affected by Altitude, by the way. Part of the Fans First Sports Network. Recording to you here on St. Patrick's Day. And Evan doesn't like my Irish accent. Those are my people, Evan.
Those are my people.
They're my people, too.
Oh, isn't that like just your, that's just a general white person thing. Oh, I'm Irish. Oh, really? Yeah, I'm like 32% Irish on my mother's side.
My favorite thing is always when Conan O'Brien talks about how he went to the doctor and they did the, you know, the blood testing, family DNA testing, and said he was 100% Irish. It's like, yeah, it just means your family is inbred. Conan. But yes, we're here to not talk about our family heritage, though that Irish brogue may come out, and we'll talk about Lucky Charms, maybe
a little bit of corned beef and cabbage.
Oh gosh, I've had that. Oh, it's disgusting.
So here's the thing, I actually like corned beef and cabbage, but you gotta like prepare it right. Like, because if corned beef is always fine. Corned beef is fine. But the cabbage part is you actually need to just have it not be soggy, wet, flavorless, boiled cabbage. Which is, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And I get it, is that it's a meal that was, you know, meant to be cheap and feed the family and whatnot. But come on, it's 2024.
Ooh, I'll just take some nice, fine potatoes.
I mean, I like potatoes. I do.
Mm-hmm. You can boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
Big fan of soda bread. I love soda bread.
I do like soda, and I like bread. Probably not combined.
Ben, that's not how that works.
Well, but you got your chocolate in my peanut butter. Anyways.
I just poured a bunch of Coke into my,
into my
bread dough.
Put some Coca-Cola in between two slices of bread and call it a day. But we're here to talk about Rockies baseball, as always. And spring training, nearing its end. A couple, what was it, like 2 weeks left? A week and a half left, roughly? Or so. So it's coming down to the wire here. And but kick things off here, Evan. Probably the most exciting thing I was looking forward to this spring was the spring breakout game. Happened over the weekend against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Unfortunately, they lost a little 7-inning exhibition game. But an exciting, fun game, and it's been a fun thing to kind of keep tabs on over this weekend across MLB. But the Rockies, we got a first look at some young guys that we haven't seen before and some other guys that may not be too far off from the Rockies roster. But first thing I wanted to start off here, Evan, what were your overall thoughts of the spring breakout?
I've watched a couple of these now, but the Rockies one has obviously been my favorite. And you know what? It was fantastic. It was such a good time. You're getting to see all these prospects. It looked like, even though, the Rockies lost, everybody was having a really good time with it. You had Buddy Black sitting in the dugout, and he really seemed to be enjoying himself. He was all smiles. My favorite thing is that when Drew Romo used the ABS to challenge a call, mm-hmm. and Bud was like, "Hey, that's great. This is awesome."
Yeah,
which is nice. It was fun, and getting to see everybody play was really, really cool. And I mentioned this on Twitter, but probably one of my favorite, like, smaller things about the spring breakout game was that all the prospects were getting to wear, like, actual big league style numbers instead of their camp numbers. So, like, instead of have folks wearing, like, 89, 92, stuff like that, everybody had numbers that are more like you would actually wear were you on the big league roster. And I thought that was really cool. So they're out there wearing the Rockies uniform. They're out there wearing, actual jersey numbers. Like Chase Dollander was wearing number 30. Zach Veen was wearing 13. Jordan Beck, number 34. I thought that was a really cool touch. It makes it feel to me more connected to like the big league game. And more a big part of things. I really, really liked that. But
they couldn't have like doled out cash to put those guys' names on the back of the jerseys, because there's some teams that did, but then the Rockies didn't. And I was like, that's a missed opportunity there.
I definitely agree with that, especially because it did make it, especially as the game went on later, it made it harder to tell who was in and who was playing. And it really contrasted with the Diamondbacks, who they all had, names, mm-hmm. Nameplates on the back of their uniforms. And I will say it's been now about almost 9 years, 10 years. The Rockies for that period of time generally do not put nameplates on for guys who are not on the 40-man roster or for non-roster invites to camp. Yeah. Even Zach Veen hasn't had a jersey number or a nameplate on his jersey in big league camp this spring. So it's not unexpected. It's not like a weird thing that the Rockies did, but for the spring breakout game, it definitely would have been way cooler if they had doled out to just have the nameplates on.
Cause when the idea is to like showcase all these top prospects to the fans, there are times that I wasn't fully paying attention to, I look and then I see who's on the mound. I'm like, who is this guy? They haven't said his name. I can't pull it up here on MLB TV and pull it up, because sometimes you can pull up the box score there on the TV app. Couldn't figure out. So I'm like, I hope they say his name. And then it's not until the inning's over. Like, oh, that was Seth Halverson.
Apparently the scoreboard at Salt River Field, wasn't great as well. I was chatting with a guy who was at the game, and when they made that first big group of switches out, they had Matt Caracidi listed as the shortstop. And we were just like, move over, Ezekiel Tovar, the new hero of the franchise is arrived.
A reverse Culberson.
But yeah, it would have been nice if they had numbers. But overall, just it was a really, really cool game, and it was exciting to see the prospects of the Diamondbacks as well. Jordan Lawler, who is going to be a star when he makes his big league debut, Drew Jones. But then for the Rockies, we're seeing all these guys, and let's be clear, some guys definitely had better games than others. Just pointing out the obvious, Hunter Goodman really did not have a good spring breakout, neither did Dion Jorge. But overall, really, really cool game.
Yeah, and I think this is the main thing to focus on here is we got our very first look at Chase Dolander, Evan, which after being our number one pick or our first round pick last season, He didn't really pitch at all. They shut him down. And so this was our Rockies fans' first chance to see him pitch on a mound in a Rockies uniform. And hey, aside from some initial jitters with that first batter, not too shabby in just this small little sneak peek that we got of Dolander.
Oh, yeah. For Chase Dolander, I think it was pretty clear to anyone watching that there were some jitters there. He was spraying his fastball a little bit all over the place, but still reaching, 96, 97 on that fastball in the first real game that he's played in a Rockies uniform since being drafted. His slider looked really, really good. In general, his pitch shape and his delivery looked great. It's just that he wasn't really hitting the locations to start. Did walk a batter, but also ended up working a scoreless inning. And he induced a
couple of ground balls
as well. Yeah. So it ended up being a really solid, nice, clean inning for Dolander, despite the walk.
Yeah.
Another guy that I was really impressed with, like, sign me up. I'm ready. I am on this hype train, is Carson Palmquist.
Mm-hmm.
Carson Palmquist, who pitched a little bit at the beginning of spring training. They shut him down because he was not feeling so great, had a little bit of an injury, came back and pitched in this game, pitched a great inning, had two strikeouts. I'm on board the Carson Palmquist train as well.
Yeah. And I think this was the fun thing, because we know the position players. Now, we've been watching Zach Veen in camp and Jordan Beck. Zach Veen had a good game. Nice and patient on the base paths or at the plate, which was good to see. Drew Romo threw out a couple hits, which is cool. Jordan Beck doing his thing. Yankiel Fernandez doing his thing. But it was, I think for Rockies fans especially, it's seeing what pitchers do we have. And Carson Palmquist, another lefty, Sean Sullivan, at watching him. I messaged this to our Purple Rose Slack chat. The guy looks like Jeff Francis when he was pitching. No, a deceptive fastball. He's not blown up the radar gun, but a nice delivery that, he can hide that fastball and it gets on a guy quick just with his stride and his lankiness.
Yeah.
A very deceptive fastball that's competitive and guys just can't square up.
And for a guy that's that deceptive, he works quick.
Yeah.
Like he was just moving things along during that inning that he worked. I think it's going to end up being a great pick. A lot of these pitchers, we didn't get to see everybody. We didn't get to see guys like Cade Denton, which is unfortunate. But, when it's a 7-inning game, you only get to see so many guys. Frankly, in the future, I would like to see these spring breakout games go 9 innings. Yeah. Because if you're going to do it so that you get one pitcher every inning, that way you can showcase more people on the list. And it really was, like you said, we've seen a lot of these guys. We know who they are. And there were some standouts. Drew Romo and Zach Veen both had 2 hits.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Beck didn't have any hits, but made some very loud, very solid contact. Mm-hmm. And that, as Bud Black says, that's baseball. Sometimes you get the perfect barrel on that ball. Sometimes you hit it amazingly, and it's still going to end up being an out. It always reminds me of, I forget who he was interviewing with. It was Dexter Fowler, and he was talking about how, I think it was Carmelo Anthony he was talking with, and he was like, oh, you put me in a baseball, I'll hit at least 200. And Dex is like, no, see, baseball is the hardest sport. I'm an athletic guy. I've got some speed. You put me in garbage time in basketball, I'll hit a couple buckets probably. Mm-hmm. But you come in and you play baseball, you get a 96-mile-per-hour fastball. Even if you hit that thing perfectly, there's still a chance that it's just going to end up being an out.
Mm-hmm.
But Yankiel Fernandez showing off some of his bat speed. Betty Montgomery had a hit. I really, really enjoyed the position players. But like you said, Skyler, the pitchers, a lot of these guys, this is the first time that Rockies fans are really getting to see them in person. If they haven't been following that much of the minor league system, Zach Agnes gave up 2 hits, but also had 2 strikeouts and ended up working a scoreless inning. Two guys really had more struggles than most. It was Angel Chavie and Seth Halverson. But while both of them were pitching, you could see a lot of why the Rockies like these guys. Like, Angel Chavie, he clearly, after he started kind of struggling, got a little bit into his own head. And that's where he's still very clearly a kid in terms of his player development. He's still quite young. He's only 21 and he's still pretty low down in the Rockies farm system, but he's got a really good delivery. He's got good pitches. You can see why the Rockies like this guy. And it's the same for Seth Halverson, who had a little bit of a difficult inning, but when he's showcasing his stuff, especially after the meteoric rise he had last season, where he went up through three different levels of the Rockies farm system, you can see why the team is high on this guy. And that is the thing, because we'll talk about these a little bit, talk about a little bit later, but it's always the pitching for the Rockies that gets severely underrated in the national media, in video games, all over the place. But this is a good way to sit down and look at and truly evaluate their stuff. And I was joking in our game thread over on Purple Row that maybe we need to, if this is going to be a regular thing, maybe we need to push our preseason perps back a little bit until after the spring breakout game, because there were several people going, I think I would change how I ranked some people.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the big takeaway for me as we wrap up this conversation is with the pitchers, there was a wide variety. No, it wasn't cookie cutter. Oh, just a bunch of sinker ballers coming through. But we had hard throwing righties. We had some sneaky, deceptive lefties. Now, there was a good mix of pitchers, which I think is a testament of what the Rockies are trying to do as a whole, as their team trying to change their philosophy of pitching. And so it was overall just a really fun game to watch. And no, there's things, yeah, we could wish if it was longer, or hey, just do 2 7-inning doubleheaders that day so you could get even more prospects, you know, on the list, you know, and see even more guys get some more action that day. You know, more interviews mid-game, talking to somebody in the outfield, more stuff. But I think overall a success, and I look forward to them, you know, trying to do it again next year and see how it can evolve and get better.
You know what I think I would like to see? If you kept it 7 innings, I would like it to be a series of 3 games or 4 games, and maybe you have a game each against each team in your division.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, I think some would that would be good. Just get more exposure type of thing during spring training. Because, yeah, just the 1 games are nice. The quick little thing, you know, maybe scatter some throughout. Who knows? But overall, a success. Pretty fun thing.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And especially, you know, just circling back on what you mentioned, where, you know, a variety of different pitchers doing different things, people working up in the zone instead of just peppering the bottom of the strike zone. You know, Sean Sullivan putting that deceptive fastball up in the zone.
Yeah. The heck is going on over there in Colorado? Yeah, crazy stuff. But actually, Evan, we'll go ahead and take our first break here in our quest to not have the super long episode. We'll see.
Will we keep things under an hour for the first time in like 4 weeks? Find out.
No. But we'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll touch on something about some potential news concerning the skipper for the Rockies. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
They call him Skipper, Skipper, Skipper. Faster than lightning.
Welcome back here to Affected by Altitude. I'm Skyler. That's Evan. Not using our Irish brogues. But, hey.
Why don't we sing us a song of the Emerald Isles?
On the peat. Ah, the peat. But, some news, Evan. we pushed this out of this first segment because it was last minute, right before we started recording here on this Sunday. Good old Thomas Harding of MLB.com reports that manager Bud Black and the Rockies are talking a contract extension. It's not clear if they can get it done before the season starts, but indications are there is a desire to stay together. So we have some thoughts on this, but I'll stick with Evan here first. Thoughts on Rockies wanting to stick with Bud Black for another year?
So this is something we've talked about a couple times now on the show of, you know, when is the extension going to drop? Because we felt like it was coming, especially when the Rockies made no changes to the coaching staff over the offseason. They're trying to keep consistency. And so, you know, literally right before we started recording, Thomas Harding, Rockies beat writer for MLB.com, comes out and says, Rockies manager Bud Black and owner Dick Monfort acknowledge they are discussing another contract extension to avoid going through 2024 as the last year of Bud Black's contract, but no deal has been reached. So now they've done extensions, single year extensions in both 2022 and 2023. To avoid heading into the season with it being the last year on his contract. And when he took over as the Rockies skipper, he had like a 3-year deal and then signed a 3-year extension. And now he's had these back to back and potentially back to back to back 1-year extensions to avoid him sort of being a lame duck manager going through the season. And it's, I'm going to preface this with, I like Bud Black. I do. But I also wrote an article that said it was time to move on from Bud Black. Mm-hmm. And I still think that that might have been the best case. Because here's the thing. If you're just going to keep doing 1-year extensions again and again and again, then it's always going to be the same thing. It's always going to be this weird, you know, trying to avoid him being the lame duck manager or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if you're ever going to move on, if you're ever going to make a change, it's going to happen at some point. So yeah. it's odd to keep doing it this way. If you truly genuinely believe in Bud Black as the skipper that you need to get us through this rebuild, then just sign him to a multi-year extension.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, have that band-aid pulled off to be like, okay, Bud Black is the skipper, let's get on with the show. But instead they keep doing these 1-year extensions where it basically, you know, people say it as, you know, it's Bud Black's job until he doesn't want it anymore. But then you're making it so confusing and weird for the fans and for the team because you want that consistency, but you don't necessarily know if you're going to have it until 2 weeks before the regular season starts.
Yeah. Yeah. And I go back to, so I admit that Dick Monfort sat and watched Moneyball one day and that scene where Art Howe comes up to Brad Pitt. And he's like, it's hard to do what I do under the cloud of a 1-year contract. And I think that Dick Monfort saw that and he's like, yeah, I think that's true. And so, like you said, this continual kicking the can down the road of, oh, we don't want it to be his last year, have that hanging over him. Well, then that's why you sign him to a dang contract. Like, it has to be the final year of a contract at some point. Like, you just can't have it in perpetuity.
Yeah.
And so it's,
because otherwise, you're either just waiting for Bud Black to say, you know what, I think I'm done.
Yeah.
Or you're going to fire him mid-season. Or yeah. You're going to fire him at the very end of the season.
And which I don't think they'll do. And here's my thing, Evan. If the Rockies value Bud Black so much, and I think they do, they value him quite a bit, let him just work in the front office then. He can have farther reaching capabilities in the front office doing something, joining the ranks of Clint Hurdle and Vinny Castilla and Todd Helton, going around the system and helping. No, I think that would do a huge thing. because Thomas Harding writes about it, and like a lot of reporters, they like having, no, there's that father figure in the dugout. And yeah, I think Bud Black can be good. He's that leader for these young guys to kind of look up to. And some I've noticed this spring is Bud Black is kind of like loosened up a little. I'm sure he's always kind of been a loose guy, but he seemed even looser. Like we were talking about in the prospect segment, you know, he's cracking jokes. He's happy. He's like, no, when I was old school, like, I love this new technology. I'm learning to embrace new technology and I love it. You know, and so I think this influx of youth in the Rockies turning to a youth movement is kind of making him think more youthful and modern. It's probably still not enough, but I still don't know if he's the guy that needs to be in the driver's seat, you know, the captain of the ship in perpetuity for these next couple of years. But it's in that weird spot of, well, they should have started this rebuild 2 years ago. And, oh, he's right in the middle of it. That's perfect. No, we're starting to contend in 2024. That's great. Instead, contentions, hoping to start contends, still a year away, maybe 2 years away. And I think it was, I want to say it was Thomas Harding or somebody that wrote, I think that the Rockies really want him to be at the forefront for the next window of contention. Now, it seems like they feel they owe that to him as a manager of, oh, we owe you this window of contention. We want you to be the leader. But if you believe that, then give him a 2-year contract. Like you said, 2-3 years. What is this 1-year business?
Stop stringing it along. And because, yeah, you know, I do agree with you. Like, what I wonder is if, because I think we can both agree, at the end of last season, Bud seemed pretty miserable.
Yeah.
Where he was very snippy, more snippy, more tending to snap back at the media, especially during post-game pressers, than I had ever really seen him before. Because, you know, Bud's generally been, you know, we've considered him a pretty laid-back dude. Throughout most of his contract, though, definitely, you know, an older fella and a little bit taciturn. But, you know, we had the thing where we've seen him snap at reporters when the Rockies lost their 100th game. He didn't really address that very well. And I wonder if, because, you know, we've both said we've noticed him looking a little bit more loose, I wonder if it was just that Band-Aid getting ripped off. I wonder how much pressure he was feeling to not be the skipper to lead the Rockies to their first 100 loss season. And now that it's done, it's just a weight off of his shoulders, because I don't think Bud hates being the manager for the Rockies. I think it's clear with, you know, how much he does obviously care about his players, but also how hands-on he is, where he'll take grounders at first. He'll throw batting practice. He'll do a bunch of different stuff and work with everybody and make sure everybody gets their time. And so I really wonder if that's what was going on last season of now the Band-Aid's off, the pressure's off, and they can just focus on the rebuild. Because, as I've said repeatedly, the Rockies tried to avoid it for as long as they possibly could, and they really ended up falling sort of bass-ackwards into it. But the rebuild is here, whether they like it or not. So you might as well just get moving.
And I think that's the thing, is he kept having in his mind this idea of, oh, we got to compete. We're competing right now. We're going to do our, but then accepting, hopefully now, and I think we saw it halfway through last season, accepting, oh, I have these young guys I need to play now, instead of, well, Jerickson Profar, Harold Castro, you're playing every day. Woohoo. But he's accepting that. And that's good as a manager for him to do that. But said, I think it's time for a different voice as the manager. You can keep Bud Black in the system, and I think he would absolutely enjoy that, and he could do a lot of good. Bud Black has done a lot of good. He's done a lot of frustrating things in his mismanagement of players on the roster and his approach to some things and his old school mindset, but he's slowly starting to change that. But is it right for him to still be the manager for these next couple of years, even? I'm like, I still don't think so. He can be in the organization doing something else, helping oversee everything in some capacity. But I don't know, maybe it's weird. They got to figure this out, because at some point it's got to be his last season.
Yeah.
And then who do you have as manager after that?
And it's okay for it to be the last season.
Exactly.
Like, you would just need to address at the beginning of the season of, like, you know, I think after this year I'm done. I'd love to stay with the organization, but it's time to, after this year, get a fresh voice in the clubhouse. We're going to spend the year evaluating our options and interviewing everybody. You know, this, it's not any pressure on Bud. We love Bud. He's been such a crucial part of this organization. But the goal is in 2025 to have a new voice, a new leader. And, you know, Skyler, back when we lost our 100th game, you mentioned Don Baylor. I remember this, and I talked about it in my article that I wrote. So that you said, I've been thinking about Don Baylor's quote about the Rockies in 93. People say we're going to lose 100 games, and it's not my competitive spirit to simply accept that. This club, specifically the front office and its owner, needs to get that competitive spirit. And I think partially the different kind of competitiveness is why Bud seemed so miserable last year, is because this team is careening off the edge of a cliff towards the 100 losses at the bottom of the ravine. And now we're in the rebuild officially. But I do agree that at some point the Rockies need to get somebody that's got a little more fire in their belly, a little more outward competitiveness, because Bud is, he's very dialed back. He's very, not stoic is the word, but, you know, Bud Black is Bud Black.
That's the best way to put it. Like I said, I'm fine with him being with the organization still in some capacity, and I think there's a lot more good he can do. Just promote him up, you know, make him some sort of special assistant. Make him president of baseball operations.
Sure.
Or you'll bump up Bill Schmidt, and then boom, Buddy can be his assistant GM or, you know, something. Or just work in there in the pitching system with Steve Foster. There's something more that he can be doing. And at some point, yeah, you got to just pass the baton. Warren Schaefer, okay, you've been here, now you lead this squad type of thing. Pieces are there. Rockies just have to be comfortable accepting that things can be different. You can be better without missing out type of thing. Yeah, I know. But we'll probably have this discussion again when the deal officially gets announced. Probably this, they'll sneak it in the same day they announce their TV plans for cable. But shifting gears here real quick, Evan. Positives and negatives of spring training. And mostly, it's things that were encouraged by this spring by the team or by certain players, but then also things that are maybe a little worrying that we're seeing that could carry over into the regular season. But first thing, Evan, what's your most encouraging thing you've seen this spring for you?
Most encouraging thing is the increase in walks. Mm-hmm. We are definitely seeing better plate discipline and more walks, and from guys who weren't necessarily known for their plate discipline. For example, Sam Hilliard is tied in a three-way tie for most walks so far this spring with two guys who are really known more for their plate approach. Sean Bouchard, who has had a fantastic walk rate and on-base percentage over his first, you know, parts of two seasons with the Rockies, and Jacob Stallings, who's not really much of a hitter, but he can draw his walks and get on base. Sam Hilliard, however, has been more of a free-swinging, aggressive kind of hitter, who strikes out a lot. And he's only struck out five times so far this spring, and he's walked six times. That's really encouraging. But the fact that you have a bunch of guys who have a decent number of walks. Now, don't get me wrong, strikeouts have still been a problem for some guys. For example, Nolan Jones has 16 strikeouts, and even Sean Bouchard has 10. But strikeouts are more okay if you can balance it out. Even Bud Black has talked about, you know, there's guys we're looking at where it's the strikeout to walk ratio. And he talked about that with Michael Tolia, of we have guys who are striking out way too much and not drawing enough walks. And Tolley has even been okay with the walks. He has 14 strikeouts, which, yes, is high, but also 5 walks. So right now he's rocking a .415 on base percentage right now. And that'll play if he can carry that into the regular season. That'll play just fine. So that's something that I'm really encouraged with, is the plate discipline.
Yeah.
So far this season.
It's a good one. It's a super important one. And along with that, for me, with those walks, is a lot of offense in general, just base hits and things like that, getting on base. We need boys on base. Score some runs. A really encouraging one for me is really kind of a twofold. It's Kyle Freeland and Cal Quantrill. Those two have done really well this spring. Kyle Freeland's looking really good, like almost old school Kyle Freeland, hitting 94 on the gun. Haven't seen that in a few years. Looking good, just cruising. Cal Quantrill, who we're hoping, I hope it translates to the regular season, having to pitch at Coors Field and adjusting to on the road. But he's attacked, playing for the Rockies head on, and he's looked good. Well, from the numbers, since he hasn't been on TV at all.
Yeah, that's been really frustrating. The fact
that this whole spring, we haven't seen him.
Yeah, we haven't been able to see Cal Quantrill at all this spring when he's been pretty good. Mm-hmm. And we're really missing out on that. And he's pitched 10 2/3 innings and we haven't seen him physically.
Haven't seen a single one. But it just looking at the numbers, box scores, like, okay, yeah, like this plays. This will do well. Like having him and Freeland at the top of your rotation, it's nice to have a confident, like, okay, 1-2, I'm pretty confident in this, the 2 games of this series, that we have these two guys to roll out back-to-back. Hopefully it carries over.
The big thing for me is Freeland, yeah, where Freeland now has 4 starts. He's going longer and longer each start. He's up to 5 innings. He's only walked 1 batter the entire spring.
There you go. A lot of ground balls. He's been getting strikeouts, too, as needed, which is nice when you're, again, pumping gas again, in a way.
Yeah, he actually leads all Rockies pitchers in strikeouts this spring with 14.
There you go.
And that goes to show how important getting that velocity back up was.
Yeah, because ground balls are nice, but you got to be able to get strikeouts, too.
Yeah, it can't be only ground balls.
Exactly. And pounding the zone, I think that's a big thing for him and for a lot of those starters. If they can just pound the zone, things will work out well. Another encouraging thing for me, Chris Bryant. Swing looks good. He's been getting some homers, which is always nice. That's what we need from him. But I think that's the few times I've been able to watch him take at bats. The swing looks good. And again, we're just hoping a lot of this stuff can translate over the course of a regular season. Can Chris keep up that swing, keep looking good, stay healthy in the box? Because if he does and he can, you know, keep hitting home runs like he has been in spring, it's like, what, 3 or 4 home runs? Swings looked good, and hopefully it can carry over to the we can actually get that 20 homer season that we want out of him.
Another encouraging thing for me is the extended looks some young guys are getting, mm-hmm, this spring, where guys like Aaron Shunk and Jordan Beck have not been reassigned to minor league camp yet. That's really encouraging that they're actually, it actually feels like they're kind of giving some of these younger guys a real shot at making the team, especially for Aaron Shunk. I talked about him on my Rock Pile last week, that he's now getting a pretty decent amount of playing time at shortstop to add that to his repertoire, because he's in the running for that utility man spot. And that would be a really cool thing for him. And he's played it fairly well. He's not had a ton of opportunities for like big deal plays, but this is a guy who had never played shortstop ever, mm-hmm, in professional ball in college up until this spring training. And now he's getting some reps at short almost every day.
Hmm. Yeah, and from one intense purpose, they seem to like him at all the spots defensively, and so it's good to see those young guys. Like Jordan Beck got a huge look, like a good long look, before he was finally kind of reassigned. So it's, they're embracing the future is, the future is now, old man.
Is Beck officially reassigned to minor league camp?
I think he was, yeah.
Let me, that's something I can take a look at right now.
But they're saying like, yeah, he'll probably start the year. And like, that's what Bud Black's saying. He'll probably start the year in AAA and we'll see where, what we'll go from there. So
yeah,
that, dude's that knocking is, on the door.
Yeah, definitely. Bud Black mentioned during the spring breakout game that both both Jordan Beck and Drew Romo are going to start the season in AAA, but they're a lot closer to the big leagues than I think a lot of people realize.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've read my rock pile today, when this is going up, it's exactly what I've talked about, is that these two guys and a couple other players that we've seen this spring, it's not a matter of if they debut in 2024, it's when they will. At this point, you can tell.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Things that, no, maybe might be a little worrying for you out of spring training. Again, we always have to take spring training with a grain of salt in a lot of things. We've had this conversation before, but still, there's always worries when we see some guys. And so what's been worrying you this spring?
So this one's tough, and I've mentioned this before, that it's really hard to evaluate big league pitchers during spring training because they're usually working on stuff or making some adjustments. And so I wouldn't necessarily say I am worried, but I'm really curious to know what Justin Lawrence is working on. In seven appearances so far this spring, he has an 11.37 ERA, has given up 11 hits and 9 runs. 8 of those are earned. Granted, only one home run he's given up, and he's also only walked 2 batters. So it's not the command that's an issue. And this has been a thing that Lawrence has been working on a lot throughout his development, is placing the ball in the strike zone and not walking batters. So he's done a good job of that. He's got 10 strikeouts. But the amount of hits that he's giving up, and his sweeper is breaking a little bit less and he's throwing a little bit harder. I am just really curious as to what he is working on prior to the spring. Cause I'm not, like I said, I'm not worried per se, but it's odd to see him giving up so much contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a worrying thing, is when a guy's just getting hit a lot. You look at the amounts of hits given up. Okay, he's not walking dudes, but he's given up a lot of hits. So what is the quality of his pitches? Where are they in the zone? Where is he missing in the zone? Why is he leaving a slider over the middle of the plate? That kind of stuff. And that can be for a lot of guys. Like, what are they doing? Guy worrying for me, or concerning, is Austin Gomber. He's a worrisome one, because we know what he can do when he's thriving, when he's doing good, when he's shoving. But he hasn't had a good spring, or a very good spring, or you'll see things coming out. He pitched in this minor league game. Oh, he gave up 4 runs on 7 hits. Oh, but he did strike out 5 guys. So it's this mixture of Austin Gomber's not being lights out, but he's not being like super awful. But it's still concerning of what Gomber are we going to get in his start of the season.
So this is actually something I can address. And I spoke about it a little bit in the state of the position for the rotation, is we actually know what Gomber is working on this spring. And he's mentioned it a couple times that one of the reasons he's been struggling is because he's really trying to get it down. He's changed his mechanics to take more pressure off of his back. Because you'll remember, in his first year with the Rockies, where he was pitching really well, then ended the season with a fracture in his back. And then last year he was shut down early because his back was inflamed and it was really giving him trouble. So what he's been working on is changing up his delivery so that it's torquing less on his back. And he said a couple times that it has to do with where he's placing his legs and how he's turning his body, that sometimes he is, you know, sort of halfway between his old delivery and his new mechanics, or he's accidentally going back to the old delivery, because pitchers are creatures of habit. It's hard to break a habit, and you've been doing this same delivery for the majority of your career, and now you're trying to change it. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is, like, spring training is exactly the time where you work on that kind of thing. So it's really going to be, it's the same I said with Justin Lawrence, of waiting and seeing what they look like in the regular season. Like you said, what Austin Gomber are we going to get on opening weekend?
Yeah. Fun stuff. Any other worrying things before we close out this final segment, or the close out this segment?
I wouldn't say worrying, but you, everybody knows I very much love Alan Trejo, and it makes me a little sad to see, especially with Aaron Shunk and how he's been playing, is potentially his role with the big league club disappearing. And so we'll wait and see how that goes. And that's the hardest part of spring training is waiting for these roster cutdowns and seeing, you know, who makes it, who doesn't, who's selected for these roles. And we're going to have the same thing later, where it's going to be, you know, the Rockies are going to have to choose between Sam Hilliard and Bradley Zimmer. The Rockies are going to have to decide if Elias Montero is going to be on this big league squad or if they have to move on. That's always tough. That's a hard part of spring training. So that's, again, something I don't know if I'm worried about, but it's just something that's been weighing on my mind. A guy I am worried about is Gavin Hallowell. Gavin Hallowell going into what will be technically his third season professionally, though, you know, his first season, he really only showed up at the very, very end of the season. He's having a tough spring. He's got an ERA of 13.50 through five appearances, four and two thirds innings, 10 hits, seven earned runs. Three of those are home runs. He's hit a batter. He's walked three guys and he's only struck out five. That's a concern for a guy who, you know, is fighting for a roster spot, or was fighting for a roster spot. He's officially been optioned to AAA, but that's a tough look. He's been one of the pitchers that I would say has struggled the most this spring in terms of guys that I am actually worried about. Another guy that I'm a little concerned about is Victor Vodnik, who we picked up from the Atlanta Braves in a trade last year. Victor also is giving up a lot of contact and giving up a lot of runs. You can definitely see his strikeout stuff there. He's got seven strikeouts in six and two thirds innings, but there's still clearly a lot of work that needs to be done for him. And I think if he over the next couple games doesn't really show where he is moving towards, that he is going to end up in AAA to start the season.
Yeah. Good stuff. But yeah, we'll just have to see how things turn out at the start of the season. But yeah, it's nice to say we're a little more, I don't know, optimistic. I don't know if it's just because our expectations are so low. The concerns are a little less worrying heading into the season. But hopefully those two guys can get some good work down in AAA, iron some things out. But we'll go ahead and take a quick break here, and then our last segment, we're going to talk about them Vigi games. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to Affected by Altitude. Final segment coming up here. I'm Skyler, that's Evan. And figured, close things out. Evan and I, we both like playing the video games from time to time. And MLB The Show 24 is now available. At least the early access, and then the regular copy comes out here pretty soon too. Whatever. But ratings are always all the rage at the start of the season. And overall, MLB The Show, folks at Sony San Diego, not too kind. They don't think too highly of the Rockies roster.
Yeah, it was. So I have the early access version. And I sat down today and I pulled the ratings for every in this current build. There's going to be changes coming soon, but in this current build for for every Rockies player, and there's two different sets of ratings. You have your Diamond Dynasty ratings, which is the card mode where you pull cards from packs and whatever, and then you have your standard live ratings, which are the player ratings that you get when you play just regular games or you're doing a franchise mode. And on both of those, it's a little rough where, you know, in the Diamond Dynasty mode, the Rockies do not have a single diamond rated player. Their best player is Nolan Jones with an 82 overall rating, which is gold, I believe. Though in the franchise rosters and the live rosters, they have him as an 88, which is, it's a little weird, that discrepancy. But then also there's some position discrepancies and other things like that. Things that haven't been updated. For example, I was playing an exhibition game and using Kyle Freeland, and they still have his sinker and his fastball averaging that 89 miles per hour, which, yeah, doesn't really play. But, you know, as we've seen for him this spring training, you know, he's getting that up to 93, 94. Kyle Freeland is also pretty poorly rated in the franchise roster. He is a 69 overall, and in Diamond Dynasty, he is a 67. Guys who are rated higher than Kyle Freeland in Diamond Dynasty include Justin Lawrence, Tyler Kinley, Jalen Beeks, Cal Quantrill, and even Herman Marquez, who hasn't pitched and will not pitch until after the All-Star break. But it's always weird, and some of these ratings are, I would say, disrespectful. My man Case Williams, they have him listed as a relief pitcher despite the fact that he is a starter and has been a starter pretty much the entire time he's been with the organization. They have him at a 45 overall in the franchise mode ratings, and that's just mean. Like, Angel Chavi is 46 overall. Jaden Hill, who is expected to make his big league debut this year, is a 52 overall. It's weird. I don't really get it for some of these ratings. It's the same as, like, you know, they have Ryan McMahon ranked pretty highly. You know, he's a 75 in the Diamond Dynasty, he's a 78 in franchise. But then you have some other guys who, you know, are pretty good or had some pretty solid years, and they're ranked very, very lowly. For example, Lucas Gilbreth, who, yes, he didn't pitch last year, is only a 65, but he's been pretty good in his big league career. Like, that seems low. And I know that it's definitely biased, but if you look at, say, the Dodgers roster, they do not have nearly as many guys ranked this lowly. And you look at the Rockies roster, and they really only have a smattering of guys who are above, who are 70 or higher on both sides of things. And it's the pitching staff that really gets the worst of it. The Rockies bottom 10 players in their franchise rankings are all pitchers.
Good old ratings. And to the game creators' credit, the Rockies pitchers really didn't do them any favors, do themselves many favors. And I don't really understand how they get around to creating their ratings. I like to see that process more.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of these guys that are like, yeah, this dude should be like Jake Bird coming in at 66 in franchise mode, despite having like one of the best reliever seasons last year. It's weird.
Yeah, Jake Bird having a lower overall rating than Matt Cook. And don't get me wrong, I love Cookie, but he's not a better pitcher than Jake Bird. Or like Jameson Hanna in franchise is a 66. Jameson Hanna, who, you know, we acquired him several years ago. I think that was when we traded Jeff Hoffman to the Reds. And, you know, he's sort of fallen off the prospect rankings. But you look at the list, and Jameson Hanna has the same rating as Jordan, is higher rated than Jordan Beck, is higher rated than Yankiel Fernandez, is higher rated than Alaris Montero, who's on the MLB roster, and is the same rating as Chase Dolander, and only 1 point below Zach Veen. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then they also, the Rockies also, in my opinion, always have way fewer of like the cool flashback cards. Where if you've ever played the Diamond Dynasty version, there's like cool veterans and Hall of Famers and stuff like that that you get for each team. And the Rockies usually don't have nearly as many as the other teams. And this year they're starting off with four. The best of which is an 89 rated Charlie Blackman from his 2017 season. And then the other special cards you get are a special Daniel Bard, which is neat. It's cool. But, you know, after the last couple seasons poor Bardo's had, I'm not so sure about that. This one's a cool one, I will say, is Justin Morneau. That's cool because there's been a ton of guys like that where they don't really get this him in a pull. And then a gold-rated Vinny Casilla. But, like, you know, where's my 1994 All-Star Andrés Galarraga card? Where's my Rookie of the Year Jason Jennings?
Where's my 2007 Rookie Tulowitzki or 2010 Tulowitzki? More Carlos Gonzalez. And I know there's all the weird stuff with like licensing, trying to get the rights to guys. I mean, it look how they just barely got Derek Jeter last year. And like, there's, I don't know how all that stuff works out. The licensing for these players is weird. But
there's not a Larry Walker or Todd Helton card to start the year.
Yeah. Which is weird. To the two Hall of Famers, and hopefully they'll come. And like, yeah, overall, there's never many Rockies in general. I don't really play Diamond Dynasty that much because it's really an annoying mode that's not very well made, because it's just, oh, you're going up against these dudes that have all diamonds, and it's a home run if they make contact.
If you don't have unlimited time or unlimited money, it's basically impossible to make any progress.
Yeah, or it takes forever. Ugh, the grind. The grind is awful.
Yeah. Versus franchise mode, you can at least dive right in. But then, you know, these ratings, which I don't want to call disingenuous, because I don't think there's like a maliciousness to Santa Monica Studios or
Sony San Diego.
Sony San Diego. Did they used to be called Santa Monica Studios?
No, Santa Monica makes God of War.
That's the God of War people.
Where's Kratos in Diamond Dynasty?
Boy. Hit that home run, boy.
Is what? Being a Greek god a PED?
Yes. Is the ashes of your dead family rubbed all over your skin a performance enhancing drug?
Boy.
Don't look in my locker. That's where I keep the ashes. But it's tough to jump into franchise mode because these low ratings make it harder to play franchise mode with the Rockies than some other teams.
Oh, but there's a simple way to fix that, Evan. Is you select a player and then you go down to edit player and you go down juice, to attributes
juice.
And you juice those suckers. Or I don't juice them. I just like, okay, I know.
Let's like, make some adjustments here.
Let's make some adjustments. Nolan Jones is not a 62 fielder. Let's bump that up so he's like a gold fielder.
Yeah. Why is Brenton Doyle's arm strength so low?
Yeah.
Why is Kyle Freeland's fastball so slow? I'll give a shout out to one of my buddies. He makes some really good, more realistic rosters for MLB The Show, especially for the Rockies. It's called the Scrax roster, S-K-R-A-X-X. And they're generally very much worth downloading because it makes the Rockies a lot more realistic in what their players look like in terms of player potential and stuff like that. So definitely worth a shot. But you know, at the same time, it's just, I feel like, you know, everybody always talks about the ratings for sports games. That's just how it goes in NBA, in Madden, in FIFA, or I've never played FIFA, so I actually don't know. I assume so. But you look at these ratings and you go, it feels like the general national attitude of the media towards the Rockies, which is they didn't really do their research.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really know anything about the team.
Or like when you go into the community rosters, the roster vault, and you look for one that's more up to date. I'm like, oh, okay, like this one, highly rated. I get it. And they haven't touched the Rockies. Like everything is pretty much the same, but the Rockies haven't been touched. I'm like, oh, well, this roster is useless to me.
Yeah.
Even though I mostly ever do fantasy draft, but I like to have stats like.
But you want things ratings. To be like the whole point of for guys like you and me. And I recognize that potentially we are in the minority. It's the simulation aspect of the game that we are there for. We're not there to pull packs and play Diamond Dynasty and all of that stuff.
No, because I can't hit. Throwing curveballs in the dirt is garbage.
How am I so bad at a game I've been playing for over a decade?
Mm-hmm. Put me in franchise mode. Boom. I'm wonderful. You put me in Diamond Dynasty and I'm swinging at every curveball in the dirt.
I also really like, it's a relatively new mode. They added it a couple years ago, that March to October mode.
And that's
like franchise light.
Yeah. I hate doing that because it only ever takes the opening day roster.
Yeah.
And I like when my rosters are up to date. So I just do franchise.
But it really does feel like, because you know, we know how it is where we go, you know, the national media, you hear a reporter talking about the Rockies and you go, wow, you really very clearly don't know anything about this team that you're reporting on. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. You haven't done your research. What's going on with this? And that's how it feels with the Rockies. And I know other small market teams or small to medium market teams in the game suffer from this same thing. But as a Rockies fan, it's always very obvious when you go in and you look at the rosters and you look at the ratings. Some guys are rated crazy low. The positioning is wrong. The numbers on their uniforms are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this is stuff that you can just go online to MLB.com and get. They have it all there. Sam Hilliard is not wearing number 14. That's Ezekiel Tovar's number, but for some reason in this roster, it has Hilliard is wearing 14, but he's wearing 16.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I said, Case Williams being, you know, for whatever reason, ranked 45 and being a relief pitcher.
Yeah. Or like a guy like Hunter Goodman, franchise mode at 63 rating. Like, yeah, he should be in the 60s, but like bump him up. He should be like 67, 68.
Yeah, like he's still a big league player.
Yeah. It's a weird system.
It's a frustrating system because I feel like it has our guys catching a lot of strays, but also it has guys being like kind of overrated. Like I love Daniel Bard, but he was not a better pitcher than Justin Lawrence last year.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I love Yunkiel Fernandez, who is one of the highest rated prospects in the Diamond Dynasty rankings at 67, but you've put him above guys who are on the big league roster, like Alaris Montero and Michael Tolia.
Mm-hmm.
Or poor Noah Davis, who's a 63 overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a weird system.
Yeah, or again, Jake Bird. You mentioned Jake Bird is a 66 overall in franchise. In Diamond Dynasty, he's a 65. Jalen Beeks, who just came to the team, is rated higher than a guy who was in the upper echelon of relievers last year in terms of success over a lot of appearances.
I think the big thing is like whatever algorithm or how they do it to establish the rating numbers on the different stats, like statistical attributes. it doesn't account, and that's the what you'll run into. It doesn't account for the real world factor and like context of, okay, yeah, Jake Bird probably may have some numbers that look like he's a 60, a 65 rank pitcher, but if you actually like watch him and, you know, consider where he plays and what he, the amount of work that he put in last year, like the amount of innings he pitched, okay, then that should give us some context. Yeah, we can bump him up a bit more to maybe a 70 or something like that. But, oh well. Like we said, the editor, edit player, a beautiful thing. You can correct all their mistakes and do it for free, so they don't have to pay you. You can pay $70 and get the pleasure of fixing the ratings.
That's true. And sometimes it does feel kind of nice to go in and be like, and fixed, and let's get that contact up. Let's get that velocity up. But there's the thing, is that you also shouldn't have to.
Yeah. And the nice thing is these aren't the end all be all. These ratings will fluctuate throughout the season.
But come on, man. 52 for Jaden Hill.
Yeah.
A top 30 prospect for the Rockies organization. And you likely potentially going to be on the opening day roster if he continues his spring this well. And you put in my man at a 52.
Mm-hmm.
That's disrespect.
Goodness.
And yet I'm still playing the game. So I recognize that I am part of the problem.
I'll just continue to play last year's on my Switch until the end of time.
Well, honestly, like the last one that I really, really loved, like the last show where I'm like, man, this is a great game. Was probably, what was the one that had Shohei Ohtani on the front? Was that 20?
22.
No, 22 was
Shohei. 21 was Fernando Tatis Jr. 20 was Javi Baez. 19 was Harper. 18 was Judge. 17 was Ken Griffey Jr.
I think I'm thinking of Harper then. But 17, 18, and 19 and 20 in some parts were all, I thought, like each one felt like it was getting better. And I enjoyed all of them. And I feel like it's been diminishing returns since then, which is this whole other topic I could ramble on for about for hours. And Skyler will kill me if we continue to run this long. So I'll just say, is that having no competition for a major league sports title makes the quality of the games worse. We've seen it in Madden for decades. We've seen it with NBA for years. We're seeing it in MLB The Show now. There needs to be competition. There needs to be other games. But that's all I'll say on that.
Mm-hmm. We need a new Mario Baseball.
We do need a new Mario Baseball, though.
And put Major League Baseball players in it like that weird Nicktoons game.
That's not, you know, that game gets a lot of grief, but for like, if you're a kid and that's one of your first baseball games that has like real big league players in it, it's a pretty fun time.
I want to be able to bean Bryce Harper with SpongeBob.
All right, the winner of this game gets the Krabby Patty secret formula.
Oh my. Anyways,
I would be 100% to be down because for the Mario Baseball with real MLB players in it, because it just reminds me of my
NBA
favorite
Street.
Level from but I was gonna say my favorite oh that's right, the DS version, right?
No, it was on the GameCube.
I think there was a DS version too, where it was like,
yeah, maybe, but
Mario and but also like Square Enix characters, because Square Enix did a lot of the heavy lifting for the development.
Yeah, that was Mario Superstar Sports thing, Mario Sports Mix.
But I'm just I'm thinking about a new Donk City in Mario Odyssey. Mm-hmm. That has like real proportioned people, and then this little potato man that is Mario is running around.
There you go.
And I think that would be really funny to see in a baseball video game.
All I'm asking for is Yoshi to launch a dinger off of Yoshinobu Yamamoto. That's all I want. Make it happen, Nintendo.
What about, who's the guy for the Red Sox? Whose nickname is also Yoshi? Yoshitaka Matsuda, I think.
Yamamoto, yeah.
Anyways. Let me have a pitcher's duel between Shohei Ohtani and Waluigi.
Wah. There you go. Marquee
Nintendo, matchup these of are the free year. Ideas. Free.
Careful, they're going to send us a cease and desist if we keep talking about it. No.
I mean, we're not charging money for it.
Oh, we're not? That tip button below.
Don't forget to buy a t-shirt. Smash that like button and donate to our Patreon.
And we've run long once again, but
I take full responsibility for this, but you brought up Mario Baseball and that kept it going.
Kept running with my jokes. But Evan, where can the folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Evan underscore Lang 27, also on Instagram. Would love to hear from you. Catch me on Purple Row writing the Monday Rock Piles and the Pebble Reports. First Pebble Report of the year following the spring breakout game went up today at time of recording. So, or not time of recording, time of release. So definitely go and check that out if you haven't already. You can find us at Rocky Mountain Rooftop on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. That's at R-O-C-K-Y-M-T-N Rooftop. Skyler, where can the folks find you at?
Find me over on Twitter at sideline underscore crowd and writing Wednesday Rock Piles for purplerow.com and writing stuff over at fansfirstsports.com. But this has been Affected by Altitude. Always appreciate you tuning in. And until next time, I'm Skyler. That's Evan. Hit him with it.
Yoshi! I can't make my voice go that high. Farewell!
Farewell!
It's me, a baseball. I'm gonna win.